Hi guys, this is Mario San Jonas from TradeMe here today.
Hey, what's up?
We figured we're going to do a video where we go through a couple of basic concepts that's important to know if you're going to be doing sports betting. Just really beginner stuff and trying to break down the different concepts that are important in the world of sports betting.
Yeah, so I mean, as most of you guys probably know something about sports betting, some of you might not. I always like to use my dad as an example because he is a punter and, you know, he thinks he knows things, but he really doesn't. So, for example, he's always like this. We sometimes tip something called a tipping coupon together. We have to pick like 12 matches. So what I do there is I look at what's the probability of each team winning, what has the other people been betting. And I tell him what people have been tipping for too much and too little. Sometimes you gotta gamble, and I say to him, like, well, we gotta put this as a I don't know what you call that, like, when you don't want to leave any other marks, you just have one thing, for example, one outcome. On the tipping coupon, you can have all three outcomes.
Yeah, okay.
So I tell him, like, okay, we gotta put this one as a safe one. They need to win. And it's like, well, why that? Why is that? Like, Barcelona is playing at home, Manchester United is playing at home, Arsenal is playing at home. And I tell him, like, well, because of the Asian market, I can easily see that United maybe have like a 70% chance of winning, which is good. Like, yeah, they're going to win more than the team I'm saying. And the only issue is that the Norwegian people maybe have been betting for United to win like 82%. So the 30% of the times that they don't win, it's going to be a lot bigger prices. And even though it's going to increase the variance, it's going to make our coupon more plus EV. So my odds, for example, I can use one example from last week. It was Dundee versus Patrick Thistle. And Dundee, I don't know if they have a bigger name or whatever it is, but they were underdogs on draw no bet in Asia. However, there were people that bet them 70% of their slips on the Norwegian site. And the away, that was 10%. So 10% on a team that's going to win like over 33% of the time, and 70% on someone who's going to win less than 33% of the time. To me, it was clear. We just need to put the away team to win here and go for a safe one. And it all goes down to probability.
Yeah.
And then knowing how things works.
I want to shoot in a quick question for you there, Jonas, and that is, you're talking about probability right now, but if you go to a bookmaker, what you're seeing is odds. So what's the relationship between probability and odds?
So odds is also, it's just a different way of using probability. Instead of using percent, they're using odds. But if you take 100 and you divide it by any odds shown on the bookmaker, for example, if something is 2.5 in odds and you do 100 divided by 2.5, you get 40. What that means is, according to the bookmaker, they're paying you out as if it's 40% chance of this team to win. I mean, if it's 2 in odds, it's 50%. If it's just like you do 100 divided by the odds, and that's the probability. So, in order for you to have a plus EV bet, your team needs to win a higher percentage than the odds you're getting. So, for instance, if it's 2.5, you know they're paying out as if it's 40% chance of them winning. And if they win 38% of the time, you're going to be losing money. If they win 41% of the time, you'll be making money. What is hard then is to figure out how many times does the team win? And how can you be sure about that? For instance, it's hard to come up with like something that is just as set, because the margins are small. Whether it's 38% or 41%, it's really hard to sit down with pen and paper and figure that out. But what you can always do, and what we're doing with TradeMate, is using the Asian markets as a signaling tool. And we can calculate then the probability on each team winning and what kind of return you're expected to have, if it's a plus EV bet or a minus EV bet. plus IV or minus EV basically means if you're going to make money or lose money long term.
I think we should probably just explain the EV thing a bit more in detail, because that might be a concept that's new to a lot of people out there. If you played poker before, then I'm sure you're familiar with it. But I think it's something for the average guy. It's not a term that they use to hearing every day.
No, that makes sense. It's just been in my vocabulary since I was 16 years old, like 10 years now. So we can use something that most people is familiar with, like a coin flip.
Yeah.
If I were to offer you, do you want to flip a coin? You can pick any coin. Just like make sure it's not weighted or anything. But I'll give you 202 in odds, and we'll bet $100. Which means I'll have to put up $102, and you're putting up $100.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So if we flip the coin two times, 50% of the time you're gonna win one, and I'm gonna win one.
Yeah.
The only issue is that I have to then pay you $102. So 50% of the time, then you're gonna be up $2.
Yeah. At
25% of the time, I'm gonna win both, and I'm gonna be up $200. The other 25%, you're gonna win both, and then you're gonna be up $204. So if you have a 202 in odds on something that has 50% probability, that means you have a 1% edge, or a 1% plus EV bet.
So how did you come up with that number?
So what you can do here is, for example, you can take your profits, your expected profit, and everything you're winning, for example, here it's 202, and what's up there is 0.02, which then equals 2%, but you're not going to win all the time, so you're going to win 50% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So you can divide that by 2, and then you're left with 0.01. So if, for example, if we were to do 204,
so we remove 1, that leaves us with 1.04, which is the same as 4%. But since we only win 4%, no, half of the times, we have to multiply it by 0.5, which is the probability of us winning the coin toss. So what we end up with is a 2% edge.
Yeah, okay, that's an easier way of doing it. These things, I guess it just takes some practice, and once you're really into it, it just makes sense to you, and you all of a sudden forget why it makes so much sense. What we're doing now is like we have a Slack channel and everything where we try to help people and create a community so people can ask each other, and we're also there to help out when needed. And our goal is basically to interfere with our customers so we can know what, for example, needs to be changed with our software, what can we do to improve. If something is not working, we can deal with it straight away. And most important of all, like, our customers can talk with each other and share their experiences. And if somebody figure out something that is really good, they can tell others about it. And if something is not working for someone, they can talk to them about it, and they can let us know, and we can look into their data. We can see if they're just like being unlucky, or if they're not being unlucky, if there's something that's not working.
Yeah, and just really sharing different experiences with different bookmakers, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
that's it's a lot of good stuff going on there in the Slack community. I actually have a story with regards to the coin toss. So in one of my classes back when I was at the university, we had like a negotiation course.
Yeah.
And the teacher, he sort of wanted to really express how people perceive risk differently, and also why the majority of people are more afraid to lose money than they're willing to sort of take risk to gain money. So what he said was that we're going to flip a coin. I put up 100 and he put up 200. Does that make sense? To give like that should be a pretty large edge, shouldn't it?
Yeah, like 50%.
Yeah. So that was the bet. Like each of us had to bet like 100 and he'd bet 200 on a coin flip. And so that was a bet that was there for anyone in the class to take. If they just put their hand up and said, yeah, I'll do it. So when that happened, I mean, I looked around my classmates, like no one willing to put their hand up. I was just took another second and just straight up got the bet. So I was so happy because I knew it was a really, really good edge.
Yeah.
And I don't think that unless I had been using EdgeBet or TradeMate as it was called back in the day, then I would never have taken that bet. But there was a huge edge in practice in class, so I took it. Unfortunately, I did not win.
but
that's part of the game. I'd still take it a million times over.
Yeah. I mean, things like this. That is short term versus long term. You know that every time you do this, you're making 50% of your money.
Yeah, exactly. And
it's just like. If somebody asked you like, hey, can I borrow $100 of you and I'll give you back 110 in a week? If there's somebody you really trusted, I'm sure everyone would have done that compared to like taking that $100 flip with 50% edge.
Yeah.
Because they're just like, okay, I'm making 10% like risk free. Obviously, that's good, but it's so much better to put some risk into it and have five times the return, expected return.
Exactly, and that's why I'm currently doing sports betting and not trading stocks or anything. Just the returns that I'm able to get here would make anyone I know who trades stocks pretty jealous and really too good to be true, is what they tell me.
So, yeah, I mean, in a way, it is, and. The issue then is like we said, with bookmakers limiting you.
Exactly.
And I mean, it is a catch, but it's not a catch that stops anyone from doing this. It might stop you from doing this for years on, but it's all relative then to, for example, how much money you have. If you're a millionaire and you're only able to bet from, because even though you're limited, you're still allowed to bet up to like $500 on a single line. For example, last week I thought I was limited on 888, so I just started betting with them to get some points that will help me like proceed in some kind of bonus program they have with poker. And there was a game I was able to put on over $1,000 on.
Yeah.
And when you can get on over $1,000 and you're limited and you got multiple of this coming on, like, for most people, that's money that they're not going to bet for more than this. So as long as you even stick to the recommended leagues, when you get limited, you can grind out a pretty large turnover. And you can basically grind out a living. But obviously you have to put in the hours and stuff in order to reach that turnover.
Yeah.
But the majority of the bets is on during weekends. And I'm able to get on, I don't know, $5,000 or something turnover on a Saturday and $5,000 on a Sunday. Which is pretty good using one bookmaker there.
Yeah, I just want to expand a bit upon what you said with limitations in case we got some viewers who are totally new to the world betting. So basically, bookmakers limit anyone who wins, which leaves them with only losing players. This is how they run their business. It's pretty sick, actually, that they're able to get away with it by the governments and everything, just running a business which exploits people and leaves no winners at all in the long run. So, but once you do get limited, as Jonas is saying, you know, it only affects how much you're allowed to bet. So you're still able to withdraw your money. And there's no risk of losing it, just so that's perfectly clear.
Yeah, so I guess this is more affecting the people with a lot of money, who's interested in taking big risks compared to the people who is doing this as like a hobby. You know, most people out there, they're happy with putting up anywhere from 5 to 50 pounds on a bet. Yeah. And to those, they will barely be affected at all. Uh-huh. And even if you're betting up to 500 pounds, you will be affected, but you will not be like, it's not going to be taken away from you. What we have done is to basically separate the league system. So there are some leagues that the bookmakers are willing to take more risk on than others because they think they have more knowledge about these leagues, which I agree, they do. But the thing about them is, like, as soon as there comes new information into the markets, the Asian markets will move drastically. If somebody has some inside information that some players might not play, or I don't know, something that's just like, the Asian markets is going to be the first one to react. And then the bookmakers have like anywhere from 2 to 15 minutes to make their adjustments. So with TradeMate, you can then jump in and get the price before it gets reduced. And that's something that I really loved seeing myself. It's just like, every time I put on a bet, I see the odds changing, and it always drops. Why was that? Like, why is it dropping?
Yeah.
I'm like, well, then I read into it, and it's like, obviously, that's because of the Asian market is moving as well. And they're realizing that they're just copying off odds of the Asian markets. And it's simple. As long as you can do the changes, like make your bets before they do their changes, you can print money off them.
Yeah. So just to show you guys, in the background right now, I have a free site called Odds Portal, which is an odds comparison site. So you can see the odds offered by different bookmakers here. And as you can see, you know, the bookmakers, they have different opinions on the home and away team. Some of them, the highest there offer 3.9 in odds for Arsenal winning, while the lowest offers 3.43. So different prices, basically. What you also can see is that the odds is constantly moving. You know, the red arrows indicates that the odds has been dropping here recently, while the green ones indicate that it's been increasing. So just to give you guys another really good example of what Jonas was talking about here, we have the classical example that we like to use at TradeMate, and this is a game between Chelsea and Manchester City. It's a cup game that was played, I think it was last year, if I remember correctly. And what happened here is that you have the Asian market, which is the orange line here. So they had odds at 1.75. Now, Norsk Tipping, which is our government bookie in Norway, they have very conservative, very low odds that they offer in almost all games, where they price themselves way below the rest of the market. So they had their odds set comfortably at 1.7 in odds. But then suddenly news gets out that Manchester City is lining up with a bunch of youth kids in their first 11 against Chelsea. So the Asian market responds to this new information entering and just suddenly drops. Well, you can see that Norsk Tipping, they don't see any danger at all. They're keeping their odds at 1.7, pretty happy that they're way below the rest of the market. And then suddenly, what is it, almost 20 minutes or the initial drop, they noticed, oh shit, we're so far behind the rest of the market, or so far above the rest of the market. Now we need to drop our odds. So they shifted down to 1.55. But by this time, the Asian market has continued to drop. So it's now at 1.43 or something. So still, Norsk Tipping is way, way above the Asian market. And it's another edge here. It's more value to be had. And then around 1.42, it seems like the Asian market started to stabilize itself. And eventually, after another 15 minutes, then Norsk Tipping react and drop their odds so that they're back below the Asian market. So this is what Jonas is referring to when he's talking about watching the movements in the Asian markets, and how sometimes the other bookies, especially the European bookies, or what we also call the soft books, they lag so far behind that value bets occur.
I mean, this is extreme example. I mean, this example doesn't come by on a weekly basis. It's basically cup games that can be having like huge impacts in terms of lineups, because you never know if a team is going to put out their first 11 team or is going to use a lot of reserves or just use a lot of people that's not match fit to get like fitter. It all depends like on this, and this compared to a Premier League game where, for example, it could be just one player not starting or something like that. It's rare to see like five players, like I said, but one or two players can be, for example, Arsenal versus Liverpool last week. It was a shocker that both Özil and Sanchez did not start, if I'm correctly.
Yeah, that really surprised me as well.
And the odds were like dropping slowly on Arsenal prior to the kickoff, and then all of a sudden, like boom, the odds on Arsenal just increased like insanely. Then if you were using TradeMate or any other signaling tool, you could see that and you could get in at Liverpool at a great price.
I got an edge there on Liverpool, so I was pretty happy with that. It's my favorite team, so them winning and the bet going in, that's the dream football day for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's always nice, but you just gotta be able to separate your feelings when you do sports betting, because that's the most common failure that I think most people do, is like they have favorite teams, they refuse to bet against them. I mean, it's fine when you're betting for fun, but if you want to do it seriously, you cannot really pass up on too many edges. And if you're on top of it, just gonna place money on your team at a bad price just because you support them and you think they're gonna win, a lot of your, what can I say, hard-earned money that you, or EV that you've been gaining from putting on these good trades, is gonna disappear. So, for example, myself, I try not to look too much at league tables, forms, or statistics. Like, I'm in a couple of betting groups on Facebook, and I see the most common thing they're doing is like, oh, you know, like this team has beaten the other team 4 years in a row. That doesn't matter at all, because now you can see how many players that get changed out of, in and out of the squads every season.
Totally different team.
Yeah, and people don't even look at or can remember like who was injured in the last game they played. Was it any players for the losing team that was injured? How did they win? Was it like how did the game go down? You know, one game is a lot of variance. So those statistics is just like useless. If you try to use them to make a living out of sports betting, you're going to be broke before you get started.
Yeah. And not to mention that all of these things like form and injuries that are known in advance have already been taken into consideration by the bookmakers when they make their odds. And especially like at the Asian bookmakers, you know, they have entire teams who work every day with modeling these odds, with taking all these factors into consideration and weighting them appropriately. So
yeah, I mean, I do disagree a bit with you there, because The Asian markets, when they open, they have small limits. Yeah. And as you get closer to the kickoffs, the limits will increase as bets will come in on both sides. So what their opening odds is not going to have such a big impact for them. But obviously they try to be as accurate as possible. But it's basically the market who will determine how the odds is going to map out.
You're absolutely correct.
So because of that, like, yes, using the Asian market as a signaling tool is more profitable or more reliable when you do it the closer to the kickoff. But that doesn't mean you should not take a trade early on. It just means like a lot of things that cannot be accounted for at that time can happen. As for example, the Arsenal game, before the lineup comes out, you don't really know what kind of team is going to be playing. Is there any last minute injuries? Is there anyone, for example, if you bet a day prior to the game, is there anyone going to wake up feeling not so well the next day? You know, people get sick, food poison, like a lot of things can happen.
Yeah. So basically what you're saying is that the odds are a lot more volatile in the hours before the kickoff, because there's still new information that can come into the picture, such as lineups and injuries and everything, that will make the odds adjust.
And yeah, but I mean, it can go both ways. So, for example, you can end up having an insanely good bet, or you can end up having a not so good bet. So, I mean, overall, we can probably break down statistics and see how we've been performing on early trades and bad trades. I mean, some of our early bets probably has been really good. Some of them has been not so good.
Which is why you always want to look at the average over a large sample size.
Yeah. If you have a 1% edge, 2% edge, 3% edge, what kind of difference does that make?
Yeah.
And, for example, the coin toss. Like I said to you earlier, after two flips, if you're just flipping it two times, the chances of you being in profit is high. It's 75%.
Yeah.
But the profit is then just going to be so marginal. It's going to be either $2 or $2 50% of the time, or it's going to be $204 25% of the time, or minus 225% of the time, which is a big swing. But according to the research we did, it's close to 50% chance of being even after 100 flips. But that's just being even. What it doesn't take into account is what's the chances of being negative 500 versus being positive 500. Because after 100 flips, if you make on average $1 every time, you're going to be looking at making $100 on expectations over 100 flips.
Yeah. So basically, but it's more likely that you'll end up with being $100 or something plus than it is for you to lose the $100, right?
Yeah, so that if you look at statistics there, if you lose 49, I win 49 and lose 51, which can easily happen. You're going to be down. So it's a 50% chance of being down or up. But if you lose 49, you're going to be down. Is it $2 or something? I mean, then it's not a huge loss for you. But if the other way goes, like you win 51, you're then looking at like 200 profits. So, I mean, it's just the same goes for betting. Over 100 bets, it's easy to be up or down. It doesn't matter too much. But the more volume you put in, and for example, if you do a 2% edge, it's a 46% chance of being stuck and 54% chance of making money. 3% edge, it's 42% chance of being up and 42% chance of being down and 58% chance of being up. So, I mean, it's just you just need to grind it out. You know, you're expected to make money, like you said, with the coin toss example with your teacher.
Yeah.
And I think it's just get your grinding gloves on, put on some bets, and hope for the variance to be on your side. If it's not on your side, don't get too sad about it. It's just swings, and it's normal. It's how it is. That's why it's important not to bet for too much at one given bet, because there will be times you lose maybe even 10 bets in a row, and it will be times where you just win 10 bets in a row. But that should not impact your, first of all, your mood, and also your bankroll too much. Obviously, you will take a hit when you lose 10 bets in a row. There's no saying, and it's impossible to avoid that. But just gotta grind it out, and eventually, like for example, after 1,000 bets, if you have a 3% edge, it's 18% chance of being down. 2% edge, 27% chance of being down. And 1% is like just below 39%. So it's always going to be a chance of losing, but if you also try to avoid getting the majority of your bets on 1%, you can also skew it like you're betting more the higher edge you have, which is what we're calculating. Like we're calculating how much you should bet depending on the risk of the bet losing, what's your expected return, and how much you got to bet for. So when you look at all those things, I think it's just yes, you will have more money on some games, but for example, if your teacher told you, like, hey, we can 10 double the stake on this coin toss, would be happy to do so.
Yeah.
But if I said to you, I can give you 20x on the flip we're doing, if that would be substantial money to you, you might not wouldn't do it, because if you lose, you lose too much of your money.
Yeah, yeah.
And if that's the case, well, okay, you should take less risk, but you should still get it on, get on some action.
Yeah, so it's a matter of, you know, your risk aversion, your level of risk aversion, how much money you can afford to lose and still walk away feeling comfortable if you don't have that money in your bank account.
Yeah, I mean, it's a way of handling swings. For example, if you have... so for myself, I'm 26 years old now. I don't have any kids or wife or anyone else to look after but myself. So I think I'm in a position where I can take higher risks than if I were like a father or something like that. Because then obviously I would have to be more focused about my family and be there, know that I could be there for them, and whatever I do and whatever I lose, I will have money to put food on the table for people. But that doesn't mean that I would not take any risks. It just means I have to take a different approach.
Yeah, yeah. Just to give a quick shout out for the numbers we were discussing here with ending up in profits or fail to profit after X amount of bets with X amount of edge. There's a good article over at churchofbetting.com which covers this and looks at the variance that comes with value betting. So I think our conclusion is that we believe it's worth it, and it's up to everyone to decide whether or not it's a risk they're willing to take.
Yeah, I mean, just go accordingly, depending on what you're comfortable with yourself. And what we're just calculating here is the chance of being down, but the chances of if you're up versus if you're down, for example, a chance of losing 500 versus making 500. Making 500 is so much more likely than losing. So you got to look at that also, not just like get too blinded about those like chances of not being up, because the chances of just being stuck at like a couple of bets, it's so much, it's like equal to your chances of being up 10 bets or something. If you are, or depending on just your sample size.
Yeah, and also another point to touch home upon is that this was all like based on using a flat stake size, which is not something that we believe to be the optimal strategy when betting on sports. We're advocates of using the Kelly criterion, which is a proportional staking strategy. It takes into account your bankroll size, it takes into account the edge percentage you're getting and the odds you're getting, so that you'll bet more on games where the odds is lower and the edge is higher, and you'll bet less on higher odds with lower edges. So it's a matter of like distributing your money and taking risk where you have a better chance of winning and also you have a higher edge. A couple of rookie mistakes that we see when people start trading is that they don't make enough of a commitment to it. Because you can lose 10 coin flips in a row. You can lose even on a bad day. You know, you can't in theory lose 100 coin flips in a row. It's unlikely, but you know, it does happen. So the important part is to just weather through that variance and keep going until you know you reach a couple of thousand trades, because in the end the variance will start to even out. And also there are other factors that effect when it does. For instance, if you take lower odds, then it will even out sooner than if you take higher odds. So I do think that's an important thing to take into consideration.
Yeah, I mean, that's also why we're saying like that we don't have a flat staking size. Because if you're having a flat staking size, it's going to be so hard to win as many odds as that's like, let's say you have two 6-odds and you have two that is like even odds.
Yeah.
The chances of you losing both six odds is high. It's all, like, way above 50%. But the chances of you winning at least one of those two odds is 50%. Because then it's sort of like the coin flip example again. And therefore, it's like not appropriate to have a flat staking size. And it's a way to avoid variance or reduce the variance. Because after all, it's important to treat your bankroll with respect and make sure you don't take unnecessarily risks to reduce the chance of losing money, and then that will affect your turnover.
Okay, so there's a very large edge. There's really low odds. Let's say it's 1.4 in odds, 10% edge. And how much money do you risk on one game? Even if the Kelly is telling you to put a lot of money, would you still go for it? Or is there like a limit to just how much money you're willing to put on one game, percentage of your overall bankroll?
It's hard for me to say because I'm operating a bit differently because of I do a lot of betting. I can only bet in Asia now, where I'd bet for amounts that I would be able to even bet close to Kelly if you take my overall bankroll into account. And I think it's very rare for me to have a Kelly opportunity with 10%. And if I could have a 10% opportunity, and what did you say the odds were?
1.5.
10% of 1.5, that's sick.
yeah, no.
I wouldn't mind putting up like something 15% or something of my roll on that.
Yeah.
But it's just because it's so good. But that also depends on when it is. Like if I knew this information after all those variables were out, for example, the lineup is out, it's a recommended league with high liquidity, I would trust it. But if it's like 10% and it's a Colombian soccer league or something like that, I wouldn't be as happy putting up such a large amount of my money on it.
Yeah. Right, maybe 10% is a bit unrealistic overall, but let's say it's a 5% edge, it's a Champions League game, really high liquidity market, and you'd still be willing to risk like 10 to 15% of your overall roll on one game?
If it's 1.5% in odds and it's a 10% edge, that must mean like the real odds should be around 1.3 or something, right?
Yeah.
So if it's around 1.3, I'm only going to lose that bet 25% of the 23% of the time. And because the chance of winning is like so high, I would take a big risk there, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's I think that's interesting, because one thing that I've started doing a bit lately is to sort of, once I get below, I don't know, maybe just like 1.6, 1.7, I sort of start to use a bit more flatter stake sizes, just because I don't really want to put all my eggs in one basket.
Yeah, I mean, it's all different approaches, and I don't think any is right or wrong. It depends on if you are happy grinding out sort of a steady income, or if you're just thinking, well, potentially I want to make millions betting on sport. And if you want to get up to that amount, yes, you're going to have to take some big risks at the when you get it, like a good opportunity like this. I guess I can't say what you're doing is wrong. I can just say I think it's going to be harder for you to get to a point where you can make like really big money betting on sports and grinding your way up with that approach versus if you took my approach. But with my approach also, it can be a fucking grind, because you can steadily like grind up, and then all of a sudden you get a couple of these bets, and first you lose one, and the next day you lose the other one. The chance of that is not high, but it can happen, and I know a lot of people would lose motivation if that were to happen to them, because that's like, sometimes it's what they've been making for maybe like the past 2 months or something that just goes out the window.
Yeah.
And yes, that is, that hurts. I've been going through upswings and downswings in poker, in betting and everything. And what you just need to be good at is to handling the downswings and not just don't take it personal. Like, the money doesn't matter short term, because you know long term you will get it. It's just another hurdle on the ride. I think it's then just important to don't put, like, when you go on a downswing, I've always been a bit more careful, not just like throwing out bets left and right and thinking like I have to make this money back within like a week, because I had this money before. Now I don't. I want to get it back. Because as soon as you do that, it's so easy to just dig yourself further down or take unnecessarily big risks, which is then going to be more painful for your bankroll, because that means all of a sudden you can make it back. And with using TradeMate, you're more likely to make it back than lose. But you will also, like, it's harder to deal with, let's say you have $5,000 and then you lose 750 of those on one bet, and then you'd have the 4.2K, and you continue with the same sizing or betting as if you had more money. Then you can go down to 3K, or you can go back to 5K or 6K. But the difference there, it's so much better for your account to then be between 4.2K and 5K rather than having the risks of going even lower. Because if you're down to 3K, then all of a sudden you're sizing half of what you were used to on the regular sizings. And the regular sizings is not going to be that big.